You are listening to the best of the Jason Rantz Show on this Memorial Day Monday. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are taking the day off. I hope you enjoy some of the best of content that producer Peyton has procured. Obviously, there are mountains of content he could go through and pull from for the best of material. Here it is.
Folks, yellow light!
I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Monday, to get you through what's left of your commute if you have one, to get you through the coronavirus crisis. In a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. Right here on the Jason Rantz Show, live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Got a lot of stories to get to, only 3 hours to do it. A freedom-loving grandma was arrested in Cedro Woolley over the stay-at-home order. Local health centers are struggling with the coronavirus order as King County officials are now telling people to wear masks. Plus, Chuck Todd, he gets caught in a rather deceptive edit to smear Bill Barr. We're going to get into that. This hour of the Jason Rantz Show is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
A freedom-loving grandma from Cedro Woolley. She was arrested on paper, which means she got an arrest alert without actually getting put under arrest. She got this for violating the stay-at-home order, a trespassing charge through a park that would have never happened if we didn't have the stay-at-home order in place. But because we do, because of Inslee and local officials telling you to stay at home, not going to parks, she went to the park anyway and got hit.
They're giving a paper arrest to a little granny?
Oh, I love this woman. That's Kimberly Taxdahl. She was sick and tired of children not being able to go to their local park to play. So she went to Riverfront Park. She told Q13,
I'm a fed up American and I'm tired of the BS and I want our kids playing. I want the parents in our community to make the decision as to whether or not they should bring their children out to play. I'm advocating for our poor kids that have been locked up for going on 50 days.
So to help the kids, she took to her Facebook page, a personal Facebook page, and said, look, I am going to Riverfront Park. I am going there. And I want you guys, if you're family members who have kids, I want you guys to join me as well. Safely, responsibly, come on out. So she shows up. She ends up tearing down the caution tape, which, by the way, producer Peyton, she replaced. She gave a roll of tape that she took down from the park to the city.
That's so nice of her.
She's the best grandma ever. And then guess what? Families decided to show up. But not everyone was pleased. The mayor of Cedro Woolley, Julia Johnson, not a fan of this. She told Q13 that she supports the right to protest, but not when it endangers others.
She crossed the line she enticed children to come down to the park, with her trunk full of cotton candy. She was putting them in harm's way.
Okay, so the idea that she supports the right to protest, but not when it endangers others, makes no sense whatsoever, because then you don't support the right to protest during a public health crisis. Right now, you're not supposed to go outside. You're not supposed to do anything unless it's essential travel or an essential job or if you're going for essential exercise. That means none of the protests that have happened, whether it's in Olympia or Walla Walla, like over the weekend, or here in Cedro Woolley, none of that would be allowed, according to Julia Johnson. And of course, the grandmother knew that. I imagine part of her thinking is that kids are the least likely to be negatively impacted by the coronavirus. Though, yes, it is, of course, true that it's concerning to a lot of folks that these kids can bring the virus back into the home, a home that maybe includes people who are at a higher risk of a mortality rate due to the coronavirus. But she's basically saying, look, you guys are adults. You get to make decisions for yourself and your family. Should she have been arrested on paper? I mean, actually, technically, yes, because she said essentially that that's what she wanted to have happen. She was looking to make a political statement.
We asked her to leave. She said she did not want to leave. She actually wanted to be arrested. We did not want to do that. It wasn't a situation like that.
But, I mean, she still, I mean, she got an arrest on paper. You didn't put her in cuffs and throw her in jail, but you still went through with the arrest, Julia, who, by the way, is talking to Q13 without wearing a mask. I'm just throwing that out there. Now, the grandmother, she's all like, yeah, I don't care. I was on her Facebook page, and this is how much I love her. She goes, oh, I guess I'll see you in court. Oh, no, the courts are closed down. Bah-ha-ha-ha-ha.
I'm hoping that citizens start standing up for their own personal freedoms.
So that's what she's about. Now, she's going to be on the show at 5:30. I hope you stay tuned for that interview. Because this is, I like this woman. I may not agree with everything that she does and says, but I like this kind of action because, look, the reason why this story has gone viral and is getting picked up elsewhere, the reason why you guys are talking about it or are getting upset about it is not because a grandmother was arrested. That's not why. It's because she holds a position that more and more and more Washingtonians are beginning to hold. Every single day that goes by where we see the inconsistencies of the Jay Inslee stay-at-home order, as we see how he's picking and choosing losers and winners, how he is slow walking a phase-in approach and not appreciating any of the urgency that I know a lot of you guys in the audience have to get back to work so you can be able to pay your bills so that your actual business can survive. People are getting upset. Every day that goes by, they get more and more and more upset. We've gotten inconsistent guidance from this governor. If kids are the least impacted when it comes to the coronavirus, what exactly is the harm of bringing them to a playground in 80-degree weather? What is the harm of that if it's for 10 minutes? Parents that don't have older folks in their home can certainly be responsible and make this decision on their own. What is the harm in that? If you are still practicing smart guidance that's being given by the state and local officials, washing your hands, making sure that you're not touching your face. You're telling people that they can go to the park for a walk, but they can't go to a park and go on a slide when it's kids. The least impacted by the coronavirus crisis from a health perspective. Now, this is a grandmother who understands the risks. She's a stage 3 cancer survivor. She's living with Parkinson's. She's a grandmother, which then puts her in an age. I wouldn't dare ask her her age, but it puts her in an age already beyond the pre-existing health conditions that makes her especially at risk. She is not of the belief that the coronavirus is fake. She's not of the belief that the numbers coming out are being manipulated by some cabal of Bill Gates and Hillary Clinton. This is someone who is making the choice as an adult to go outside, go to a park, and if you want to join her, join her. That's her position. Now, is it the responsible one? That's subjective. That's up to you. Obviously, there are a lot of folks on both sides of the issue listening to me right now. But she's doing something that is essentially speaking on behalf of tens of thousands of Washingtonians. And I want her to be my grandma.
That's nice, Jason.
Just a little bit.
Well,
my grandparents are dead.
She got arrested, so you won't see her for a long time. You think?
Again, she didn't go to jail. She was arrested on paper. She's fine. She's going to be on the show at 5:30. You know she's not in jail.
Do you think she's going to take the caution tape off the courthouse to be able to go and, you know, face a judge?
I think today when she comes on, she's going to say she went back to the park and took down more caution tape. That's my guess. And I kind of like that feistiness about her. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Your health.
So medical professionals are some of the hardest hit when it comes to losing work in the state of Washington, even though they are known as essential workers. But understand that just because you're an essential worker in healthcare in general doesn't mean that you have a job to actually go to. Inslee shut down the elective procedures during this stay-at-home order. He shut them down. Even though, by the way, elective procedures are sometimes necessary. We're talking about knee replacement surgery, dental services, LASIKs. All were closed as a result of a bunch of medical offices being closed down from the stay-at-home order. So you have nurses, you have some doctors, you have dental assistants. I don't know if they're considered nurses or not, because, I mean, are you really even a doctor if you're working on teeth? I'm half kidding. Don't hate me. These are folks who are out of work or were out of work. On top of that, the services that have been allowed to stay open, there's a whole bunch of people who are now too scared to go out. There's a story we'll cover later on during the Big Local of a pediatrician out of Kent and Des Moines who's all like, parents don't want to bring their kids in for vaccines because they're scared going into a doctor's office they're going to get the coronavirus. There has been so much fear-mongering instead of education happening on the state level and in a lot of ways the local level. It's getting out of control. Teresa Pasquire is the CEO of Sound Family Medicine in Puyallup. She told Como TV, we don't get paid unless they come in. She's talking about patients. She's had to temporarily lay off one quarter of the staff members at this clinic. And I know that right now you're supposed to be able to actually reopen. I know that that's supposed to happen. We talked about it last week. The guidance was given. Do you think it's just going to be overnight that these businesses not just abide by the new guidance, but they're also ready to take in one or two customers and that's it and then survive? How do you staff for that? How do you staff for that? People still too scared to go out to to get that knee replacement surgery. When you look at the local unemployment numbers, they are grim. And this is one sector that is being hit especially hard. Not the hardest, though. What do you think is the one job that got hit the hardest?
Radio show hosts.
No, well, no, I'm still on the air, and my ratings are actually through the roof. I'm doing fine. It's with a restaurant.
Restaurants.
What specifically at restaurants?
Servers.
No, keep going.
Waitresses.
No, keep going.
Bartenders.
Bartenders are number one. Bartenders
yes,
are number
it.
One. I knew you knew it.
I'm the best.
Bartenders followed by dental assistants, hairdressers, and massage therapists. I was thinking, oh gosh, I need a massage so badly.
Yeah,
I
you're not getting one.
So badly.
Too bad.
Well, during the next commercial break?
No.
Shoulders.
Nope.
Shirt on.
Nope.
Fine. You're listening to the best of the Jason Rance Show on this Memorial Day.
What's trending? Media bias.
So Chuck Todd over at Meet the Press on NBC, some others as well, they decided to willfully take Attorney General Bill Barr out of context, all so that they can attack the Trump administration over Michael Flynn, over the Michael Flynn decision. Remember, Bill Barr is now defending this Department of Justice decision to drop charges against General Michael Flynn. He's doing that because it was revealed that the FBI under James Comey, the hero to the left, the hero in his own head, they were abusing their power. They set him up in what's called a perjury trap. John Yoo, former deputy attorney general to the U.S. under George W. Bush, he's going to stop by at the bottom of the hour to talk through this. But understand, they set up Michael Flynn to try to get him to lie, also that they can go after the Trump administration. Comey did not think Trump was fit for office. And so he decided, alongside some of his aides, like Peter Strzok, an FBI agent, a disturbing one, they decided to go after Michael Flynn and anybody associated with the Trump administration. This was disgusting. Bill Barr did the right thing. The Department of Justice did the right thing in dropping the charges. But Meet the Press doesn't like Bill Barr, doesn't like Michael Flynn, doesn't like Donald Trump. So they decided to do something that, by the way, they admit was wrong. They took out of context a interview that Bill Barr was doing with CBS. They did it in a tweet reply. They just replied to a tweet, say, oh, yeah, our bad. We did it. We're sorry. Didn't mean to do it. Sorry. No one sees their tweets. More people saw, even though it's Meet the Press, it's not a huge show, but I mean, it's a pretty significant show. People saw this discussion, but didn't get the facts. Chuck Todd was talking with Peggy Noonan, and this is how the conversation went.
You brought up Bill Barr. Peggy Noonan, I want you to listen to this Bill Barr answer to a question about what will history say about this. Wait till you hear this answer. Take a listen.
When history looks back on this decision, how do you think it will be written?
Well, history's written by the winner, so it largely depends on who's writing the history.
I was struck, Peggy, by the cynicism of the answer. It's a correct answer, but he's the attorney general. He didn't make the case that he was upholding the rule of law. He was almost admitting that, yeah, this is a political job.
That's outrage, Chuck Todd. That's how Chuck Todd sounds when he's outraged. He was struck by the cynicism of the answer. Why didn't Bill Barr at least acknowledge, a little bit that this was about the rule of law, upholding justice. Basically, Barr just said what he did was political. That was what Chuck Todd said. That was what Chuck Todd said there. And you're assuming, because they played this clip of the Bill Barr interview, that Chuck Todd actually watched the entire interview. He wasn't the only person who did this. Using the exact same clip that you just heard with Meet the Press on HBO, John Oliver did the exact same thing.
Wow.
Oh my God,
now,
wow.
If I were the president's lackey trying to twist the justice system to his will, I might have answered that simple question with something like, history will show this was the right decision, or it was a tough call, but justice was served. It takes a special kind of arrogance for the nation's top law enforcement official to say, actually, history's a lie we tell ourselves as we fall asleep at night. The world is nothing but formless chaos, and there is no truth but that which the strong impose upon the weak. You get it, right? You definitely get it.
Oh, he's so clever because he talks in sarcasm and says things really, really quickly, which is actually something I do on the show. I'm actually doing it right now. He's so clever. So Oliver says history will show this was the right decision. That's what Bill Barr should have said. Todd said Bill Barr should have made the case that he was upholding the rule of law. Okay, good news, guys. Bill Barr almost said word for word what both Chuck Todd and John Oliver wish he had said. Not 10 minutes later during a long-form interview, but literally the next words in the same clip that they miscut.
When history looks back on this decision, how do you think it will be written?
Well, history is written by the winner, so it largely depends on who's writing the history. But I think a fair history would say it was a good decision because it upheld the rule of law. It upheld the standards of the Department of Justice, and it undid what was an injustice.
He literally says, with Chuck Todd and John Oliver, demanded that he should have said. Not kinda, sorta, maybe, said something similar. Almost the exact words. In one case, the exact words.
He didn't make the case that he was upholding the rule of law.
It was a good decision because it upheld the rule of law.
I might have answered that simple question with something like, history will show this was the right decision, or it was a tough call, but justice was served.
And it undid what was an injustice.
This is so disgusting, and let's be clear, this was intentional. This was intentional, and it kind of highlights something that most people, I don't think, realize when talking about the media. You assume that Chuck Todd watched the video, right? Watched the actual interview. So one of two things is at work here. One of two things is at work. Chuck Todd, the host of the show, didn't actually see the interview that he's providing analysis for, and he doesn't know what the hell it is he's talking about. Because he's lazy and a partisan hack, same thing with John Oliver, or they knowingly lied. They knowingly lied about what was in that clip. Now, I'm not sure the answer for Chuck Todd or John Oliver. I'm certain that the producers who cut up the video did that on purpose. I'm certain of that, because their job is literally to watch the videos, watch the full interviews, and pick from it items, presumably in context, that generally reflect the full bit, that generally reflect the actual answer that was given with context that makes sense. To get to what they did means willful actions. This was done on purpose, and it was done on purpose because they know they can get away with it. Yes, we're calling them out, and they've been called out on Twitter. The DOJ called them out. And so they respond with a tweet saying, my bad, knowing that the vast majority of people who they lied to won't actually see that tweet ever. This is what it's about when we talk about media bias. It's not always about what they present to you, it's what they don't present to you. The answer that Bill Barr gave was literally the answer Chuck Todd wanted him to give. But you can't say that, because remember, Orange Man, bad, and anyone associated with him, equally as bad. So let's take Bill Barr out of context, hoping that you rubes in the audience don't figure it out. I hope that people realize the landscape in which the media is operating right now. We've talked about media bias certainly before the Trump administration, but man, they hate Trump so much. They're willing to give us a master class in how to act like partisan hacks. Producer Peyton is someone who before this show wasn't all that interested in politics, not to the extent that I am. We hired him for this job for a very specific reason. I generally actually like people who don't come into the gig having all that much passion about certain political interests. And so you're going into this relatively cold. Maybe you've heard some of the things about media bias in the past. What did you learn? Seriously, what did you learn from just going over this story?
That people will literally, Chuck Todd is going out of his way to manipulate video to make it sound exactly what he wants it to sound like.
Why do you think he does that?
Because he's a hack.
But why is he doing that? I know he's a hack, but what do you think motivates him?
He wants to go out and make the president look bad and get good ratings.
Yeah, he wants to go after Trump. He's not interested in giving you news. He's not even interested in giving you analysis. The analysis he's giving is based on something that wasn't actually said. This is what they do. This is an agenda. It happens on the right as well. There's no doubt about that. In some cases, it 100% happened against President Obama. It did. You can acknowledge that. It doesn't mean that we're wrong to criticize President Obama. And frankly, it doesn't mean that they're wrong to criticize Donald Trump. What they're wrong to do is to set up a phony story so that they can do that. They're no longer reporters at that point. They are activists presenting as journalists. And we see that on display every single day. Every single day. You should be so outraged by this. Frankly, wherever you are politically, you should be outraged by this. And you should be outraged by what the FBI did to Michael Flynn. Same topic. Same issue. They went out of their way to screw over an advisor they did not like under the Obama administration. They did not want in power, and they wanted to use to hurt Donald Trump. John Yoo, the former Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the United States under George W. Bush, is going to stop by in 5 minutes to give us his take. It's the Jason Rand Show. It is Memorial Day. This is the Jason Rand Show, and this is a best of. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The shame of Washington State College is treating conservative students represent a good chunk of the documentary No Safe Spaces. It is an entertaining, but more importantly, an important film that highlights how American colleges are actively stifling conservative thought and anyone uttering, frankly, an idea progressive activists don't actually support. One of the people behind the film is my next guest. One of the big reasons why I actually got into radio, joining me on the line, is Adam Carolla. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you have a ton of interests, and a lot of them has to do with cars and racing. You've got a whole bunch of documentaries on that. So what made you look into college campuses?
I'm a fan of Dennis Prager. I got to do some live dates with Dennis, touring around the country a little bit a few years ago. And at some point, the producers just came up to me and Dennis and said, you guys want to collaborate on this project? And for me, it was more like, oh, good, I get a chance to work with my friend Dennis Prager. Because anytime you get to spend a little time with Dennis Prager, that's always going to be a good day. So I just said, sure. I it's not like I had a bunch of strong thoughts on it or was even planning on doing anything on the subject, and as you mentioned, I make automotive films. But I've made a bunch of automotive films. I made independent films. Mm-hmm. I made romantic comedies. So my thing is like, I'll try anything once.
So what was your takeaway then from the work you did on No Safe Spaces?
It's sort of what I knew going in, except for a little bit worse. What I figured out was, and what I didn't really know is that the folks who were hard left on college campuses would turn on their fellow leftists if they got out of line. And that's the part that was sort of eye-opening and a little bit scary to me, that even if you were very progressive and liberal and woke, if you didn't dance when they told you to dance, like what happened to Weinstein at Evergreen, then they would surround you and threaten you. And I thought that was an eye-opening, sort of scary moment for me.
Yeah, and it seems like the Evergreen State College scenario, which obviously on the show we've covered pretty extensively, that seems like a no-brainer to include in a movie like this, especially because it wasn't just confronting this professor. It was holding him hostage. They wouldn't allow cops to go in. It was the president of the school not being allowed to go to the bathroom without supervision. It was insane.
It was, and I don't blame the kids. It's like, I don't blame the homeless population and the homeless problem in Los Angeles. I don't blame them on the homeless. I blame the problem on the governor and the mayor and the city council. Homeless people are just homeless people, and 19-year-olds are angry 19-year-olds. It's really not them. There's always going to be homeless. There's always going to be angry 19-year-olds. Who's in charge? It's their fault.
Yeah.
It's the people letting this happen.
So then what's your solution to maybe changing this? Because I've said similar things in the past. Like, I agree that these professors on college campuses, the staff members, they've created these monsters and now they're being destroyed by them. But at the same time, these kids who are angry and crazy, they're becoming doctors and lawyers and politicians, and they're soon going to be in charge of legitimate things.
Yeah, scary.
So when do we start going after them?
Very, very, very scary. Well, I think we're seeing the chickens come home to roost already, because the faculty at Evergreen, or the president of Evergreen, is a product of the 60s and a product mm-hmm. of that sort of generation. And you're seeing the way he reacted to it, right? I mean, that is, you know, when that guy was 19, he was on some college campus protesting, you know, the Vietnam War. Now he's 63 and running a university. What's he going to do? Call the National Guard?
Well, he would. Go ahead.
And I don't. And as far as the solutions go, that's tough. If you're going to churn out a big group of these guys, and then at some point they're going to be in charge. I mean, this is sort of what Dershowitz was talking about in the movie. He was explaining, you know, his students would be the next, you know, the next chairman at Goldman Sachs and the next Supreme Court justice. And he's like, now he's scared because now it's going to be frightening. I think we'll hit a saturation point, which we're getting close to right now, and the pendulum will start swinging back the other direction, just sort of toward common sense.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Adam Carolla. His new documentary, No Safe Spaces, it's out now. There are many theaters playing it here in Western Washington, Seattle, Bellevue, Linwood, Everett, Lakewood, Puyallup. Go to nosafespaces.com if you want to get the full schedule. I highly recommend you check this movie out. You know, you mentioned that part of this problem, a huge part of this problem, are the adults who are basically shaping the minds of these kids. But it does feel like there's been a cultural shift. Have you notice that, just this cultural generational shift from millennials?
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of out of problems as a society, and there's a part of our brain that needs to fear something or fight something or push back against something. And the less problems we have, the more we'll create. I've always been aware of that phenomenon. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. When we had our second term of our first black president, Barack Obama, I said, get ready for the race, the allegations or the race talk, get ready for it to ramp up, because we, as racism goes away, we need to talk about it more. We need to focus on it more, because that's the way we're wired. It's sad, and I'm not wired that way, but many people are wired that way. And as we run out of problems, we start creating problems to go after. And think about all the things that are problematic today that would, if someone would have told you about these problems 20 years ago, you would be confused, right?
Totally.
Like someone would say, you know, I don't want these NBA owners to be called team owners anymore. And you would say, What are you talking about? They own the team. And they go, yeah, but the name is problematic. And you go, I don't get it. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you would have no idea what they were talking about, right? Yeah,
exactly. Everything is problematic, though, now. Because everyone needs this meaning for their life. They have to fight something. And what I find interesting, and you talk about this on your podcast semi-frequently, of you've not changed the way you think generally, right? You've had some, you know, small, you know, evolutions, I suppose. But for the most part, your message has always been the same. And I remember that message when I was in high school listening to you on Loveline. And yet all of a sudden now you're this evil conservative.
Yeah, I know. I've always said, you know, don't have kids until you can afford to have kids, and don't have kids if you're not going to raise them, and don't let the government raise them, and, you know, family and education and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's the same old, same old. And I've also said, you know, pot should be legal. I don't care. Gay marriage, don't care. You know, I've not changed at all. It's, the thing that's funny is when people accuse me of changing, I want them to cite an example. By the way, I'm not going to change, because all my stuff is common sense stuff. It's not political. Mm-hmm. It's not whichever way the wind is blowing. I'm not a fair-weathered fan. Have kids, raise your own kids, make their lunch because you should make their lunch, and because they shouldn't be suckling on the government teat. And it's never changed.
Yes,
everything around me has changed.
Huffington Post will say that you want to keep, or who was it that said you want to keep school lunches from poor kids? Who was that?
That whoever she is, she's long gone because she was worthless. So good luck to her. I stated that it has nothing to do with money. I don't care about the money. I'll buy everyone lunch at school. It has to do with the parents. Your parents should be responsible. You should know that your mom is making you lunch or your dad is making you lunch, not the government is making you lunch. And then she went on her show and said, I think that may have been Young Turk.
Yes.
Adam Carolla is too cheap. He wants poor people not to eat, you know. And I'm like, I stated clearly three times it has nothing to do with the money.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you're the worst journalist in the world if I say it's got nothing to do with the money. It has everything to do with the parenting. And your takeaway is Adam Carolla is too cheap. Okay.
So
I don't know. What do you expect me to do? Listen to you? Do you think people are listening?
Well, I mean, it's it's an echo chamber, though. I mean, they're talking to people who want to believe that about anyone who says anything that might stray just a little bit from their position. And, you know, last question for you, only because I know you're very busy and you usually fit in these interviews between a whole bunch of other stuff you're doing. What's the worst take you've read from some of the woke critics? Because on the podcast, I don't think I've heard you ever quote a good review of No Safe Spaces. What's the worst one that you've read? Just the worst take.
I just like the ones where they say, like, Dennis Prager and Adam Carolla smugly preening as they look down their nose at students. It's like, Dennis Prager is physically incapable of smugly preening. And so am I. Like, I can get angry, I can get loud, I can get funny, but I can't get smug and I can't preen. Like, I'm from a poor family in North Hollywood. There is no preening and there's no smugging. So I do like when they just sort of graft on a bunch of stuff that doesn't exist. Dennis is one of, if you meet him in person, is one of the most jovial, friendly guys you'll ever meet. He always has a smile on his face. He remembers things about you and your family. He laughs. He's sort of like a Jewish Saint Nick.
No, I can see that. I've met Dennis a few times. He's a very nice person. I met you once. You're a very nice person, but you know your white privilege is responsible for this documentary. And so I suppose I will thank the privilege that you had as this rich white kid growing up in what was Bel Air, right?
Oh yeah, well, Truesdale Estates, but it was right adjacent to Bel Air.
Yeah, the movie again is called No Safe Spaces. It's important to check this movie out. How close are you to that $1 million mark?
I guess someone would have to jump on to Box Office Mojo and check it out. As of last weekend, we were at about 750K. So I imagine if we're not there yet, we're knocking on the door.
Well, let's push you over. Let's have Western Washington do this. Again, Washington State colleges are pretty substantially featured in this movie. Again, No Safe Spaces is the name of the film. To get a theater that's closest to you, go to nosafespaces.com. Adam Carolla, thank you so much for stopping by the show again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. You're listening to the best of The Jason Rand Show on this Memorial Day. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. There are few wars as pivotal as the one captured in the book Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers, a story that doesn't get told as often as it should, a story that's championed by its author, Fox and Friends host Brian Kilmeade. Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers is out right now in paperback. You should go purchase it right now on Amazon because it upsets our socialists on the Seattle City Council. Joining us on the line live is Brian Kilmeade. Brian, welcome back to the show.
How are things in Seattle?
Things are a little shaky here. It's almost like people are ready for their own revolution, pushing back against some of the Inslee orders. How are things out where you are?
Terrible. I mean, basically New York is shut down. It's supposed to change on Friday to a couple of counties, but we're not going to really feel it here. They got to pick up the pace.
No kidding. It was kind of funny because this Texas fight for freedom, essentially, was really an American fight. I know it was a Texas fight, but it was an American fight. And I was thinking about your book and this story and kind of comparing it to a country right now dealing with this pandemic where it feels like we're not really sort of towing the line carefully enough between public safety and freedom. How would Sam Houston or view what's going on right now?
Put it this way. He was all about freedom and liberty. He did fail. There was no social safety net. There wasn't a lot of finger pointing. When they got into disputes, they'd actually shoot each other. Sadly, I'm glad we grew out of that. But you had a bunch of people go to Texas in the 1820s because they wanted a fresh start. America was actually too structured as a representative of the New World. The land price was too high, so they went to Texas. And they were all about freedom and liberty. All they'd show up with would be a wagon, a gun, a rake, and possibly a piece of land that they were promised. And they'd show up and they'd work it and they'd help each other out. And it ended up being one of the big success stories of the 19th century because there was the settlers poured in from America. They did exactly what they were supposed to do, but they cherished their freedom and liberty. And when it was taken away, that's when the war started in 1835.
And it ended up becoming the specific war that you're talking about, what, the most important 18 minutes in American history, at least Texas history?
Yeah, Jason, thanks for bringing me to that, because that's why I did it. I know everyone listening right now has heard about the Alamo. If you're from Texas, you lived it, you've seen it. A lot of people have seen it. It's one of the most visited sites in the country, but not many people know what happened after. It was like a month and a half after Sam Houston's in this epic battle, And it turns out against Santa Anna, who is a study general with a European-trained fighting force, against this makeshift ragtag group, many of which had never shot a man before or been in a formation, he trains him in 3 weeks and takes them out in 17 minutes, finishes them off in 2 hours. And it's one of the most remarkable victories you can imagine, because they actually caught them sleeping.
Yeah. It turns out that gives you a little bit of an edge, but it is one of those things. Just strategically, it was a smart thing to do from a guy who knew he was kind of he was going up against an actual army.
Yeah, and that's why I think that, especially out with you in Seattle, and, you know, James K. Polk would finish off the Union pretty much outside Alaska and Hawaii and mm-hmm. go all the way out west. It's really important to see how these states came together, but none, I'd argue, as important as Texas, because it really completed the West and gave that sense that, you know, America was expanding, it was going to be a force. And basically, for those listening right now who says America stole it, then you got to argue with Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, and James Madison, who were certain it came in the Louisiana Purchase, mm-hmm. and that they never should have given it to Spain in a swap for Florida. So just understand where we came from. So when people start beating you up, like maybe when this book came out, some people said, well, Texas was stolen. No, it wasn't stolen. It belonged to us. And then we went down there. It was they who chose the rules, who changed the rules. And it was Sam Houston's led forces who won. And that led us to, and the only thing I added in the paperback, Jason, from the last time we spoke, mm-hmm. was we start in War of 1812, I bring it to the Texas War, but I end with the Civil War. And it seemed like Sam Houston was the Nostradamus of early America. He predicted the Civil War. He knew it was a huge mistake. He tried to keep Texas out of it. And when he couldn't, and I was outvoted, he left office. He said, you guys mm-hmm. just send your sons and daughters. I'm not going. I'm not going to be responsible. When Lincoln heard about that, he sent him 2 telegrams. He's like, Sam, go back. I'll give you 50,000 troops. We'll keep Texas out of it. You're absolutely right. The Union's going to win. They have no shot. And he said, I can't turn my guns on my fellow Texans. So he left office. And really, he watched the carnage and all his predictions come true.
The name of the book, it's out right now on paperback, Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. A lot of folks have a lot of extra time, especially on weekends right now, to devote to reading a book. This is a fantastic book. You should check it out again. You should purchase it on Amazon.com just as a sort of a middle finger to Shama Sawant, our socialist Seattle City Council member. You know, it's funny because I wonder how many people think Sam Houston or Davy Crockett, all these folks that you focus on in your book, are actually real people and not myths. Even Santa Anna. It kind of feels like people don't realize these were real folks, and they really should be seen as sort of what, the epitome of what it means to be an American.
Absolutely. I mean, these are the people that would just wanted to be given a chance. They didn't want a break. They just wanted a chance. And they wanted to die trying. People went to Texas because mm-hmm. bad marriage, running from debt, fresh start, running from the law. And they would show up, and they'd say, wow, it's a fresh start. And that's what the legacy is. You know, this, if you ever get to Texas, it's hard to go 2 or 3 miles and speaking to people without finding out that their families date back to this war, or date back to the first 100 families that cut the deal with Stephen F. Austin to move in. And then you wonder why these movies were made about Texas, and you think it's an exaggeration. You saw the TV series on Disney of Davy Crockett, and you go, well, that couldn't be true. No, it's true. And he fought under Andrew Jackson, fought in the War of 1812. And when he and Jackson got in a fight and he lost an election, he says, basically, you can have Congress. You can go to hell. I'm going to go to Texas. And he did. And he ended up at the Alamo and was one of the last ones to die.
Well, and it's such an inspiring story, because these are folks who decided to stand up for freedom, stand up for rights at a time where right now I'm thinking about the AOCs of the world and the Bernie Sanders of the world, who are basically they're tweeting passive aggressively, but they're protesting almost in a way to take away certain rights, or at least give more control to the government. And it is just fascinating how things have changed so much.
Yeah, I mean, this whole guaranteed income is the exact anti-American attitude that people run from. This so-called blame people that are more successful for you is an anti-American attitude. Listen, life isn't fair, but this is the closest to fair you're going to get. And I bring you a guy, Sam Houston, whose dad died young, who moved out west, was a lazy kid, would cut out of school, would not work the farm, would not work the store. And he finally got so sick of the ridicule, he wouldn't live with the American Indians. If you said he was going to be the most important person in early America, they would have said you're crazy. But he was. And then you look at Andrew Jackson. He was orphaned by 13. He should have been a vagrant and a criminal. He ends up being a lawyer, a congressman, a major general, a war hero, a two-term president, and ends up being one of the most impactful Americans ever. That's the American story. That wasn't happening, and it doesn't happen around the world. And the thing is, if you keep handing people out and taking from people that are successful, it ruins the whole thing. There's no incentive for the most successful, hardest working people to create more jobs and more businesses and then mentor other people and give them opportunity. If you keep taxing them and ridiculing them, they're going to shut down. And they did. And they stop investing, and they will. And then guess what? The next generation of great Americans is going to be deprived of an opportunity.
And that spirit is certainly still alive. I don't want to give the impression that I think the AOCs and the Bernie Sanders of the world are going to overcome what it is this country stands for. But, I mean, we're seeing cases all across the country of people who are saying to these stay-at-home orders, okay, you know, we were with you at the beginning, but now it's about embracing our freedoms and our responsibilities as an adult. We had a grandmother here in the area who decided to go to a park, even though she wasn't supposed to. She ends up getting arrested on paper. We have a barbershop owner in Snohomish who decides to open up, and now the state is threatening to take away his license. It kind of feels like what Sam Houston and all of his fellow soldiers were kind of fighting for, this freedom and personal responsibility, is in fact alive and well.
It is sad. And, you know, in New York, they offer citations, but they said almost to a person, they're not going to really enforce them. And now they hired ambassadors to walk around and social distance. You know, that's a good idea. You know, hey, guys, you want to separate a little? Well, that's my girlfriend. Can you prove it? I'm not sure. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But the fact that you're enforcing it, walks in the park, the fact that you can walk on the beach but you can't stay on the beach and lay on the beach, why? Well, you can play golf but you can't play tennis. Does that make any sense?
Oh,
I can't go to a food store.
Let's go through this, because here in Washington, up until recently, you couldn't go golfing, nor could you go in a boat alone to fish, but you could go to a park to walk. If you are a publicly funded construction project, you are able to continue your work throughout all of this. But if you are a privately funded construction project, you couldn't. I kind of think we're on the same level between New York and Washington on inconsistencies.
Yeah, I, you know what I hope? I hope people don't say, well, that's my Democratic or Republican governor, a lawmaker, a mayor, or a councilman. I hope they just say, wait a second, what do we want to be part of? You know, who's going to allow me to be myself? There might be not another pandemic in our lifetimes, but that attitude is clearly something that you wouldn't want to be a part of, if you ask me, and that's how you should vote.
100%. I love that message. Again, the name of the book, Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. It's out right now on paperback. Go ahead and purchase it by my guest, Brian Kilmeade. Brian, thank you so much for stopping by. I am not the kind of person who would say, you've been on this show 5 times now and I have not yet been invited on to Fox and Friends, so I will not say that. I'm not that kind
I will
of
definitely, I'm going to go to bat for you. Especially now with the inside on Seattle.
Oh,
you don't mind getting up early.
I used to do morning radio. I hate it, but I do it. Brian Kilmeade, thanks for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Again, Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. It's out right now on paperback. Go ahead and purchase it on Amazon. And I think if we get enough, maybe he will actually have me on Fox and Friends. That would be fun. Then Tucker will get mad because I'm kind of his guest. Oh, all the infighting. It's going to be exciting. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We're back in 3 minutes. You are listening to the best of The Jason Rand Show on this Memorial Day Monday. Thank you so much for tuning in.